Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter Jr. and Brian Lynn. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Mario Ritter Jr.
Japanese health officials are permitting hundreds of people to leave a cruise ship sitting in the port of Yokohama. The passengers and crew had been barred from leaving the ship for 2 weeks as part of an effort to contain the new coronavirus. About 3,700 people were on the Diamond Princess when it arrived at the port on February 3rd. Officials ordered the ship and everyone on it placed under quarantine after one passenger was found to have the virus. That person had left the ship when it stopped in Hong Kong. However, the Japanese effort to keep the coronavirus from spreading did not work as planned. Over 540 people on the Diamond Princess became infected. In fact, they are the largest group of people outside of China to get the virus. Only people who have been tested and found to be free of the virus and who show no signs of infection are being permitted to leave the cruise ship. About 300 Americans left on Monday. All were immediately placed under another 14-day quarantine to prevent spreading the virus. Several governments, including Australia, Britain, and Canada, are making plans to evacuate their citizens from Yokohama. The Japanese government has defended the effectiveness of its quarantine. However, three Japanese officials who helped carry out the quarantine tests on the ship became infected. Michael Ryan is a doctor and executive director of the World Health Organization's Health Emergencies Program. He noted, "There are sometimes environments in which disease can spread in a more efficient way." Cruise ships were known to sometimes speed up the spread of disease, he said. Ryan added, "It is important for every nation with affected passengers to follow up on each person's health in the coming weeks." Japan's health minister, Katsunobu Kato, told reporters Tuesday that all passengers who remained on the ship have been tested. He said those who are free of the virus would be released after their 14-day quarantine period ends. I'm Mario Ritter Jr.
Six months ago, the Indian government canceled Kashmir's constitutional right to limited self-rule. Indian officials also began enforcing a ban on communications in Kashmir. Late last week, the government described the return of limited, slow-speed internet to the area as a step toward normalcy. But for the 7 million people who live in Kashmir, there are few signs of normalcy. They are only permitted use of government-approved websites. Social media sites, such as Facebook, WhatsApp, and Twitter, remain blocked. And while users can visit YouTube and Netflix, the internet connection is too slow to watch online videos. Some Kashmiris are getting around the barriers by using VPNs, short for virtual private networks. Such services let users see restricted websites. But Indian officials are looking for stronger ways to restrict VPNs. "It's still an internet shutdown," said Nikhil Pahwa, an Indian-based digital rights activist. "Can you imagine this being done to Delhi?" The part of divided Kashmir that India controls was already one of the most militarized places in the world before last summer. Since then, even more troops have arrived. So have strong restrictions on civil rights and information. The government said it had to ban the internet to prevent anti-India protests by rebels fighting for independence or unification with Pakistan. Pakistan controls the other part of Muslim-majority Kashmir. Digital experts say the internet controls in Kashmir are especially severe. The internet clampdown in Kashmir is far worse censorship than anywhere in the world. It even surpasses China's, said Pranesh Prakash. He is with Yale Law School's Information Society Project. The internet ban was partly lifted on January 25th. Since then, some Kashmiris have told friends and neighbors about ways to visit banned sites through VPNs. They also have used social media to denounce India's government. "They made us silent for 6 months. Now they've opened a window," said a student named Shuaib Rasool. "We'll tell the world what India has done to us." Internet shutdowns are a favored method for the government of Prime Minister Narendra Modi. Since he took office in 2014, the internet has been suspended more than 365 times in India, notes the digital rights group Access Now. In January, government official Shaleen Kabra said terrorists and anti-national groups were using the internet to propagate terrorism and spread false information to cause public unrest. In Kashmir, internet bans are more common. More than one-third of India's internet bans over the past 6 years have been enforced in Kashmir. Some of the restrictions have lasted for months.
People in China are using apps on mobile phones to follow and perhaps help slow the spread of the new coronavirus, COVID-19. Some of the apps provide the latest information about areas hit by the virus, while others collect data on infected persons. The Chinese government is working with two of the country's largest technology companies to keep track of the disease. The two, Alibaba Group and Tencent Holdings, created color-based systems that record the health of individuals and identify carriers of the coronavirus. Last week, Alipay, a payment app operated by Alibaba, released a system that uses colored QR codes to show the health of people in the city of Hangzhou. A QR code is a sign a smartphone can read with its camera. Once the sign is recognized, the phone takes the user directly to an internet link with information about a subject. Users in Hangzhou can then complete an online form that reports their official identification number and seeks additional information. Individuals are asked to enter details about recent travel outside the city, as well as anything suggesting they might be infected, such as a high body temperature or strong cough. After completing the questionnaire, users receive a mobile phone message. It includes a color-based QR code that relates to the health situation they described. Users with a red code are told to quarantine themselves for 14 days and continue reporting their condition by using Alibaba's DingTalk messaging app. Users with a yellow code are told to stay in quarantine for 7 days, while those with a green code can travel freely. Chinese state media said the Alibaba system would be deployed at train stations, along major roads, and other travel checkpoints. They added that the system is also being used in some neighborhoods. Two people living in Hangzhou told Reuters they were asked to show QR codes when entering their apartment buildings. Another individual told the news agency that she was asked to show her QR code before entering the local supermarket. Alipay said it was working with the government to expand the system nationwide. Tencent, which operates China's popular messaging app WeChat, reported the launch of a similar QR code-based tracking system. Tencent developed the system with help from China's National Development and Reform Council. The company said on Saturday the system is currently in use in the southern city of Shenzhen. Officials said they expected it to be deployed to other parts of Guangdong province soon. Even before the latest systems were announced, many Chinese were already using mapping and travel apps in an effort to avoid areas with coronavirus infections. One of the apps, developed by WeChat, uses official reports to identify places in the cities of Shenzhen and Guangzhou where coronavirus cases have been confirmed. Data mapping company Quant Urban created a similar system to track 9 additional cities in Guangdong province. One user of the apps told Reuters she finds the maps can provide psychological comfort. The woman, who did not want her full name reported, said, "You can't guarantee there won't be fresh cases, but you can avoid an area that's already hit." The technology website Abacus reported that citizens can request location data from their mobile phone carrier to show they had not been in affected areas. The report said that if requested, China's state-owned telecommunication companies will send users a message listing all the areas they had visited within the past 14 days. Detailed tracking records for mobile users exist in China because the country requires users to register their real names and other personal information when signing up for telecom services. I'm Brian Lin.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. The early years of the 20th century were a time of movement for many black Americans. Traditionally, most blacks lived in the southeastern states. But in the 1920s, many blacks moved to cities in the north. Black Americans moved because living conditions were so poor in the rural areas of the Southeast. But many of them discovered that life was also hard in the colder northern cities. Jobs often were hard to find, housing was poor, and whites sometimes acted violently against them. Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe tell about the life of black Americans in the 1920s and how they helped form traditions.
The years just before and after 1920 were difficult for blacks. It was a time of racial hatred. Many whites joined the Ku Klux Klan organization. The Klan often terrorized blacks. Klan members sometimes burned fiery crosses in front of the houses of black families, and they sometimes beat and murdered blacks. The Ku Klux Klan also acted against Roman Catholics, Jews, and foreigners, but it hated blacks most of all.
The United States also suffered a series of race riots in a number of cities during this period. White and black Americans fought each other in Omaha, Philadelphia, and other cities. The worst riot was in Chicago. A swimming incident started the violence. A black boy sailing a small boat entered a part of the beach used by white swimmers. Some white persons threw stones at the boy. He fell into the water and drowned. Black citizens heard about the incident and became extremely angry. Soon, black and white mobs were fighting each other in the streets. The violence lasted for 2 weeks. 38 persons died. More than 500 were wounded. The homes of hundreds of families were burned. The violence in Chicago and other cities did not stop black Americans from moving north or west. They felt that life had to be better than in the South.
Black Americans left the South because life was hard, economic chances few, and white hatred common. But many blacks arrived in other parts of the country only to learn that life was no easier. Some blacks wrote later that they had only traded the open racism of the rural Southeast for the more secret racism of northern cities. Blacks responded to these conditions in different ways. Some blacks followed the ideas of Booker T. Washington, the popular black leader of the early 1900s. Washington believed that blacks had to educate and prepare themselves to survive in American society. He helped form a number of training schools where blacks could learn skills for better jobs, and he urged blacks to establish businesses and improve themselves without causing trouble with whites. Other blacks liked the stronger ideas of William Du Bois. Du Bois felt that blacks had to take firm actions to protest murders and other illegal actions. He published a magazine and spoke actively for new laws and policies to protect black rights. Du Bois also helped form a group that later became the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. The NAACP became one of the nation's leading black rights organizations in the 20th century.
Probably the most important leader for black Americans in the 1920s did not come from the United States. He was Marcus Garvey from the Caribbean island of Jamaica. Garvey moved to New York City in 1916. He quickly began organizing groups in black areas. His message was simple. He said blacks should not trust whites. Instead, they should be proud of being black and should help each other. Garvey urged blacks to leave the United States, move to Africa, and start their own nation. Marcus Garvey organized several plans to help blacks become economically independent of whites. His biggest effort was a shipping company to trade goods among black people all over the world. Many American blacks gave small amounts of money each week to help Garvey start the shipping company. However, the idea failed. Government officials arrested Garvey for collecting the money unlawfully. They sent him to prison in 1925. And 2 years later, President Coolidge ordered Garvey out of the country. Marcus Garvey's group was the first major black organization in the United States to gain active support from a large number of people. The organization failed, but it did show the anger and lack of hope that many blacks felt about their place in American society.
Blacks also showed their feelings through writing, art, and music. The 1920s were one of the most imaginative periods in the history of American black art. Claude McKay, Langston Hughes, and County Cullen were three of the leading black poets during this time. McKay was best known for his poems of social protest. Hughes produced poems about black life that experts now say are among the greatest American poems ever written. black writers also produced longer works. Among the leading black novelists were Jesse Fawcett, Jean Toomer, and Rudolph Fisher.
The 1920s also were an exciting time for black music. Black musicians playing the piano developed the ragtime style of music. Singers and musicians produced a sad, emotional style of playing that became known as the blues. And most important, music lovers began to play and enjoy a new style that was becoming known as jazz. Jazz advanced greatly as a true American kind of music in the 1920s. Musicians Louis Armstrong, Duke Ellington, and UB Blake played in gathering places and small theaters. White musicians and music experts from universities came to listen. Soon, the music became popular among Americans of all kinds and around the world.
Blacks began to recognize in the 1920s their own deep roots in the United States. They began to see just how much black men and women already had done to help form American history and traditions. The person who did the most to help blacks understand this was black historian Carter G. Woodson. Woodson received his training at two leading universities, Harvard in Massachusetts and the Sorbonne in France. He launched a new publication, the Journal of Negro History, in which he and other experts wrote about black life and history. Historians today call Woodson the father of the scientific study of black history.
The 1920s also were a period in which a number of blacks experimented with new political ideas and parties. The difficult social conditions of the period led many blacks to search for new political solutions. Two leftist parties, the Socialists and the Communists, urged blacks to leave the traditional political system and work for more extreme change. Two leading black socialists, Chandler Owen and A. Philip Randolph, urged blacks to support socialist candidates. However, they gained little popular support from blacks. Communists also tried to organize black workers, but generally, black voters showed little interest in communist ideas. The most important change in black political thinking during the 1920s came within the traditional two-party system itself. Blacks usually had voted for Republicans since the days of Abraham Lincoln. But the conservative Republican policies of the 1920s caused many blacks to become Democrats. By 1932, blacks would vote by a large majority for the Democratic presidential candidate, Franklin Roosevelt, and blacks continue to be a major force in the Democratic Party.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.